So we're here today with Drew Williams, who is running for Congress in the 1st District in Kentucky, taking on Jamie Comer. Drew Williams, welcome to Moving Kentucky Forward.
Wonderful to be here.
I really appreciate you taking the time, and I'm excited to speak with you because I've heard a lot about you from people in West Kentucky who have been impressed, to put it bluntly. Before we get into the campaign itself, why don't you tell our listeners and viewers a little bit about yourself?
Sure. I am a construction worker. I build boat docks on Kentucky Lake and Lake Barkley. I've been doing that for 18 years. I live in Marshall County, which is in between Paducah and Murray. For people who live on the other side of the district, I've known that we're actually kind of far apart enough that nobody knows where some of the counties are, which is kind of interesting on our gerrymandering. I have a history degree from Murray State University. I graduated there in 2016. I am a lifelong community servant. I have just poured my heart into trying to instill that level of, you know, freedom and opportunity to as many people in my community as I can. And I really enjoy what that does for building up that level of the village that I think that we are so desperately missing in our community nowadays. And so, you know, I just, I enjoy fantasy novels and going to church and playing video games and being outside with the family. My son's 5 years old, and it's raining right now, or we'd be at a t-ball game this evening. Sure. And so, you know, just enjoying rural Kentucky life and the space that we've been blessed to be in, and just trying to bring, again, like that level of hope to a lot of people in our community that I feel like don't have it. A lot of my friends growing up, you know, have fallen off the bandwagon, for lack of a better term, sometimes, and, you know, either drug addiction or lack of opportunity, lack of housing, you know, lack of caring about school when you were in school, and now it's hurting you, you know, and so just trying to be available to that. My wife is a middle school social studies teacher. She's got a master's in Greek and Latin. She loves it. They're right in the middle of, they enjoy doing like projects and coloring and that, and they have like wild imaginations, and but you can teach them things, you know what I mean, like right. Like hard concepts. So she loves that little range there, and but she has a master's in Greek and Latin from Notre Dame. She has a educational master's from Murray State University, and she's getting her educational doctorate right now from Murray State University. So yeah, really, it's been really fun. I can just look up, and I got like 6,000 books in my house. I got books under the bed. I got books in dressers. You know, yeah. I had the most accelerated reader points in my high school history when I graduated from elementary to middle, or elementary to high school. So just like, you know, really trying to take in what I've had built up in me for so many years. And, you know, I'm 33 years old. It's the 250th year of the country. What better year to be involved in American politics? The conversation's never been more difficult, you know, but I also think more people are open to that conversation now than they ever have been. So it's just been really exciting to get out and be around people. But, you know, my wife just dealt with the lack of a professional degree in FAFSA funding, right, this summer. We had a summer class that she needed, and we have to pay out of pocket, or we have to get a private loan, and that's not something we're willing to do.
Yeah.
So it's just like, okay, so now it's starting to, you know, trickle down to hit us as well, in that kind of conversation. So it's been really interesting. So yeah, just happy to be a part of the conversation. You know, it's wild to see how far we've devolved in political nuance and where we can go, you know.
So. Yeah, devolved is the correct term, I do believe.
Yeah.
So you've got a 5-year old, you've got a wife who has a full-time job, you've got work. Sounds like you have a good life for you and your family. So what in the world possessed you to want to run for office?
So when I was a child, and people in Western Kentucky kind of know more of the story, my family were the Holmans. My mom was murdered when I was 4, and it was a big high profile case. I grew up with my grandparents. I lived in a community that knew everything about all that, and at the time was heavy Democrat, right? It was Yellow Dog Democrat, but it was Democrat. But like, my community gave me so much. like from day one all the way up. And so even in elementary school, and maybe it was my grandma pushing me and whatnot, but we were always in community service activities. We were doing all the extracurricular stuff. We were getting involved. And so I've always been a big community servant. I run my town fair for the last 7 years. Nobody else was doing it. I build boat docks on Kentucky Lake. I wake up sometimes and go out there and the sun's not up and I see the sun rise over the lake and the sun set over the lake the same day, you know, and I've been out there struggling, but like, I wouldn't trade it for the world. So it's just like, if I can bring that freedom and that kind of conversation to people in a way that is meaningful, so that they have that level of opportunity and that personal liberty to make choices. Like I choose to work the job I have. I mean, I make like $25,000-$30,000 a year, but I have all the time for the community service. I have all the time for family. Mm-hmm. And we need those people in our community who can afford to do that. It's one thing to say like, oh, well, you know, you want a parent in the household, right? You don't want like one parent working, one parent going there. But like when we lost that one parent in the household mentality, we also lost part of the village of people who had the ability to like deal with other people's kids and have do big community gatherings and like be those kinds of people. Now everybody's just working, you know. Yep. What I mean? And yep. We're more of a community of houses with cell phones than we are a village. And we have to be a village again, because like no one's coming to save us. So I've just been really motivated that I'm really good at the conversation and I enjoy understanding people. So like anytime somebody comes up and they have a different opinion, I'm more interested in like how we bridge that gap than trying to be right about the issue. Mm-hmm. And so a lot of times when we're having these like town halls or these meet and greets at like restaurants and like a random person walks up and they have all these crazy opinions, right? I'm super excited to hear it. And they're like, well, you must hate all this, you know, that's, you know, X, Y, or Z that I'm saying. I'm like, I just want to know. I just want to learn. I want to know why you feel this way. And so, you know, it's just been, this is way easier than my job. Like, you know, I mean, like my building boat docks and everything. Like yesterday I was driving pipe out on the lake and both my feet were wet. You know, like my shoes were soaking wet. I was standing on a 12-foot ladder with a 125-pound pipe driver in my hand, you know, driving pipe, looking out for snakes, and talking to people, right? Like, it's way easier on my body. And like, they're like, oh, you got to drive all the way across the district. I'm like, I'd rather be driving than doing some of my work sometimes. Right. So I enjoy it. It doesn't bother me. And I think that I bring a level of hope to the conversation. And that's kind of my goal. So if I can do that, win, lose or draw, I feel like we've made progress in our district and just showcasing like what people can, what you could have, you know what I mean? In terms of a representative is something I want to get forward. Cause I think a lot of people around here just think like it's a hopeless cause. I was actually the campaign manager for Sam Gaskins in 2020 before he had to drop out for health reasons. And so I've seen the district, I've seen what we can do and what we can't do. And like what level of infrastructure is there. I've been a county party chair for 5 years. My wife's our county party chair now. So I've seen like how difficult that like structure building is every single election cycle. Even though we have an election 3 out of 4 years, it seems like every time we're rebuilding the wheel and we don't know where we're going sometimes. And so I love Excel sheets and stuff like that and like organizing. Like we have a coordination sheet that has every county in the state on it. And we're pulling people in to like get us contacts and get us event spaces so we can share that data. We can get people from different counties to go to other counties and meet and like not be just a blue dot in a red sea, but like start to really populate that kind of conversation. Cause I think most of it isn't so much a conversation of can we win? We always just believe we can't. So we never try, you know what I mean? Like no one's out there like banging doors and really pushing. But like when Andy Beshear had a million door, you know, quota that he wanted to hit for that campaign and we did it all across the state, he won, you know what I mean? Like when we thought it could happen, we won. So I'm really excited to be here for people and just kind of building a conversation that matters to them.
Well, so let me ask, I've got two questions that were on my mind before we started. One was, I have, like I said, I've talked to people in West Kentucky and there was some frustration with you in the beginning because they felt like you were too nice and you weren't going after Comer
sure
hard enough.
Mm-hmm.
And I get that having talked with you now, because you're obviously operating from a really positive vision of what could be done.
Yeah.
But I have also heard that recently you've been a little more willing to challenge Comer on who he is, what he does, or what he doesn't do.
Sure.
So tell me about that. Has that been an evolution for you? Have you had to change your approach a little bit, or is it just something you decided to do as you got closer to the election?
So I enjoy policy. I don't enjoy politics, right? Sure. I enjoy the logic arguments and like trying to figure out where we can come together and move forward. So the whole campaign, including even right now when we are talking about Comer a little bit more, my goal is to talk about policy. It is not to talk about other issues. When members of our community send me a clip, you know, especially marginalized members of our community, like in the recent post that I've made about his comments on Representative Chantel Brown, I had members of our Black and Hispanic community that was sharing the post to me, and they were like, will you please say something about this? Right. Yeah. And as their representative voice, hopefully in the future, you know, I don't think we should have to talk about it, because I don't think he should have made that statement. Right. Like it wasn't effective. But in my space, like I was like, yes, I will. And then it took me 4 days of research and analytics and understanding like the differences in the districts and how that plays out and like who's paying for who, right? Because he said like my people don't want to pay for their people's welfare. Well, right. Cuyahoga County has $136 billion in GDP. That's 46% of Kentucky's GDP. We're not paying for Cleveland. You know what I mean? Like Cleveland's paying for Cleveland and probably some other places too, to have services. And so... So when we do make those kinds of arguments and attacks, right, because that's what politics is, it is technically an attack, you know, to even say his name in a negative light. It's not about his personhood, self-worth, or human dignity, right? Those are things that no one, like, I'm never going to touch, and my campaign's never going to touch, right? Like, he is a constituent. I respect him in that regard. I call him Mr. Comer all the time. Anytime people get on our page that are supporting me but are saying horrible, horrible things, like, you know, about Comer, we hide those posts, right? Like I don't need people to be chiming in and joining onto a bandwagon of rage baiting. That's not good, right? It's not where we want our country to go. But again, when he's using my representative voice to make disparaging marks and kind of racial dog whistling, like we need to talk about that, because that's how he's not representing you, right? Like, because he's creating corporate first policies that are making it to where wealth and income doesn't make it to the workers. And then he's saying at the back end, oh, well, we also need to remove their assistance needs. Right. And I was told last September, right, that we were supposed to have more children than we can afford. Right. That was one of the eight pillars that came out, you know, after the Charlie Kirk incident, you know, was like, have more kids than you can afford. And then all of a sudden, like, I don't have, there's no support structures. Where's my village that's supposed to help me for that kid that I can't afford? And so it's not so much about like the campaign, like things like, oh, like we need to go on the attack, right? Or, oh, it's going to be profitable to me. I hated doing that. I hated it. Like, it wasn't fun for me. It wasn't enjoyable. I was miserable about the fact that it even occurred. But when people's feel like as their representative, like he's specifically pretty much absconding from building a coalition, right, that we can all work together on, because our district and their district have similar needs in that structure of support systems, then like, yeah, we're gonna have to say something, because like that's the difference in what you're voting on, right, is that kind of system.
Okay, so in your district, it's probably the reddest district in the entire state.
Yeah.
What are you doing, or how are you framing yourself in order to reach people who are only going to vote for somebody with an R after their name?
Sure.
How are you trying to reach those people?
So what is interesting is that a lot of people that I come up to, and after we get through the conversation, so I'll say this part first, they're always like, well, you know, I always have voted for the person. And I'm like, you've never voted for the person. Not one time. But like, you have so many people nowadays, they're like, oh, I'm listening and I'm voting for the person. And I do that over politics, because I think that our district is understanding and becoming more aware to the fact, including Republicans, right, that this is not working out for them. It's not working out for their communities. It's not working out for their systems, their kitchen tables, right? Like, you can hate as many people as you want, and it's not going to make your life better, right? You can scapegoat as many people as you want as the problem, but it's not going to make your life better. Like, we have to work as a collective system of Americans, and I think that we can do that. So, but what I label myself as is within the Democratic Party, I consider myself a liberty-styled econocrat. So if it's more liberty in your life or more money in your pocket, those are the policies that I'm fighting for, right? Like, my main policy consideration is $100,000 federal tax exemption on income tax, because that scales with the 1913 $3,000 that they had, right, scaled with inflation. I'm not picking a new number. I'm just saying that, like, when it came out, that's what they expected it to be for. Only 3% of Americans even paid federal income tax. Now 75% of Americans pay federal income tax. Right. It's interesting. You know, who gets to foot the bill for what goes on? And so, and it's not even a big portion of the budget. It's actually only like 7%. It's like $250 billion for everybody who's under $100,000 in federal income tax. And obviously, as we've seen, we're going to be doing a $300 billion to Iran. We've spent hundreds of billion dollars in the war. We're spending hundreds of billion dollars in DHS. There is money that we obviously didn't have to spend. And so why are we getting taxed? You're right. Like, in that system. And so I have a big, marker board sign, and I stand at like the four-way stops, and I'm running for Congress, take a card, and I like hand cards through windows, and I get people that pull over, and they're like, you got 3 minutes to sell me. And like 30 seconds in, they're like, sold. I mean, I've talked to county magistrates, judge executives, like all kinds of people who are Republicans. And when we talk about, like, hey, we need an infrastructure plan that's specifically on rural town main streets and court squares. I need a 21st century court square, like all these other countries get. Like, all these other countries have these huge spaces where communities can be a part of it. You know what I mean? And we are not that anymore. And I drive through all these towns that have these beautiful court squares with dilapidated buildings on the side, and like the apartments up top don't work. And, you know, it's just dying from the inside. And we keep building a beltway around every single one of our towns to put more business out there. And we're just hollowing out, you know what I mean?
Yep.
And that relates to people. I go to a lot of conservative churches. I try to go to a new church every week, meet people. I don't have to talk about politics. I just want to be in your space, hear your story. And people will come up afterwards and they're like, what are you here for? And I'm like, well, I live over in Marshall. And they're like, well, what are you all the way over here for? And I'm like, well, I'm running for office. You know what I mean? They're like, well, that's crazy. You're not going to say anything about it. I'm like, no, I'll post a video or a post that says something about how I went to church here and the wonderful message that y'all had. And they're like, I love that. You know what I mean? Like, and so it's just trying to find a way to like meet people where they are. Cause I think that we're doing a terrible job of that most of the time. And then to have conversations in language that like resonates with the space that they're in, rather than like utilizing national talking points. Right. Mm-hmm. Not saying that Hakeem Jeffries or Chuck Schumer are doing the worst job out of anybody that could have been doing it, but they're both from New York. And so it's hard to find a message that like we understand and hear every day. So I think that candidates across the country are doing a really good job of like building that. So it's been pretty positive. I've felt much more engaged by the other side than I initially had thought last May when I filed to run. I thought that it was going to be a little bit more difficult, but I mean, the Republicans are doing so much good work for me in terms of having a bad day after a bad day after a bad day. And really it shouldn't be about left or right. Right. But like they've created a football team mentality about it. So like, you know, it's really difficult to kind of not separate those things.
So I really, you know, I'm really enjoying your message and really enjoying listening to what you're saying, but you know, we hate to talk about money, but money is part of it. And part of money is getting your message out.
Sure.
You can't be everywhere. Mm-mm. So how are you getting this message that you're sharing with me? How are you getting that into this ridiculously gerrymandered district that goes from ever to ever?
I am. First off, we've been to every single county multiple times already, right? Public events, you know, meet and greets, town halls, all that kind of stuff. We've had one in almost every county. My goal is to have 100 town halls before the general. I think that is a doable amount where it like 45 or so already. And it's really going to ramp up going forward. And of course, if I was an elected officer, it'd be a lot easier to get all that kind of organized and set up in a way that is meaningful as an individual, you know, managing my work and life. It's sometimes kind of difficult. Secondly, because I understand the infrastructure problem, not like roads, but like the campaign infrastructure problem that we have in this space, all of our door hangers are no contact. So it says, we respect your time and privacy. If you please give us 5 minutes, it pretty much has everything that we are talking about here written on the front and the back, policy platforms on the back with my face and my phone numbers on it with, you know, it's like, you don't believe me, contact me, you know, all that kind of stuff. And, we use like a little glue dot applicator, and instead of having like the door hanger, because you know every single door has a different kind of doorknob, and people feel weird about like jiggling the doorknob while they're trying to get that door hanger on there, and people don't want to have the conversation at the door anymore because everybody's scared of like random contact in that space. I've had a lot of people that are like, we're getting ready to door knock, and people comment, they're like, if you door knock at my house, I will not answer. And I'm like, well, then you know, why are we wasting 30 seconds knocking, standing there? You're looking through the window. You're not going to answer, right? Let's just hit it and go. You know what I mean? If we hit every door in every town, we'll come back and we'll start doing, you know, knocking doors and asking specific people for their vote. But as your representative, every single door deserves a touch. And we only have the infrastructure to speed run that. So we do like a door dash. Instead of door knocking, right? And so the glue dot applicator is really helpful because it doesn't leave, it's not abrasive, so it doesn't leave like a mark on your glass or anything like that, or take paint off. But you can put it on vinyl, you can put it on brick, you can put it on the fence post. I put them on the no trespassing signs, right? And they'll stay for like 2 months, so like you'll see it, it'll be there for you. It's not going to blow away like a door hanger will in the high winds, and we've had terrible weather. I still have one on my door that's been here for 3 months because I'm using it as a test, right? It's in the sun, it's in the rain, it's there. And so that's one way, is that like I've distributed probably 45,000 door knockers or palm cards and to counties all across the district. And their job, is to hopefully go out and do that and apply those to as many doors as possible. A lot of times we're trying to be like very tactical on who like we contact and touch with canvassing. And I think that like, you know, if you knock on one door and you have to walk 8 doors before your next person, you just wasted a whole bunch of time that, you know, we could be doing for outreach. Cause like, I'm going to need independents, Republicans, disenfranchised, non-voters. I'm going to need them in order to win. You can't just get the people who show out and show out like to get going. Now, is that helpful for, you know, can we get some more yard signs if we target people? Sure. But like I bought 1,000 yard signs. I'm almost out of yard signs. I'm going to have to go buy more yard signs. So my goal is to have a yard sign on every street in the district, right? At least one. And so I don't want you making a turn without seeing another yard sign down the road. Because I believe in the Doug Jones mentality on yard signs. They don't vote, but they bring a hell of a lot of energy. And if you have a whole street with them, that somebody has to drive by, they're like, man, you know, maybe I could vote for this guy. You know, maybe I could, maybe I do need to give him 5 good faith minutes. Because what I've noticed is like when we can get that 5 good faith minutes, I win 95% of the time of that argument. Right. Cause like I'm happy to listen. I understand where you're at. I understand the differences. I've been watching so much of the conversation for so long that, when they bring up like these like very, rehearsed talking points, right? It's easy for me to be like, well, this is the counter to that talking point that works all the time. And so if I can get into that space, I'm very lucrative in making it impactful. And so yeah, it's not so much of a message as much as an outreach conversation. And I agree with you, it's definitely difficult. The thing that helps me, that Comer is doing to help me, is that he's worried about running for governor. So he's not going to spend a dollar on this campaign. There's not going to be signs. There's not going to be meetings. He, the only public events that are, you know, available to the public, not like a private event, because he does come to the district for like meeting with like a, you know, the staff of like a hospital or like, you know, awarding some money, but they're always private events. The only public events he has are outside of the district because he's trying to run for governor. He's trying to meet new people, but he doesn't do that in the district. So every time I hear people bring up Comer's name, they're like, isn't he running for governor? And I'm like, yes, yes, he is. Yeah, he does not care about this position at all. And so that's going to be helpful in terms of, like, it's going to look like everybody out there supports me that's being visible about it, because we're going to be all the door hangers and we're going to be all the people being vocal and at festivals, right? I have probably 6 or 7 teams of people that are volunteers in different county regions. We've, like, regionalized each, like, my district into, like, 12 different micro regions, and inside of that we have given them the equipment to go to festivals and, like, set up a tent and have all of our content at all these public spaces. Like, it just stand out in front of it and force it into every single person's hand, right? Yeah. Like, and that's what we're gonna have to do. And again, if people give it a moment, everybody, people will start reading the card, they'll turn around, they'll look at what we're talking about at the festival tent, and they'll walk back and they're like, 1 minute, you said this. And I'm like, yeah, you know, like, that's what we're fighting for. And they're like, I like all this. And I'm like, 100% you do. Right. We own a campground here. We build our boat docks at the campground, so we have a lot of campers. I had a guy came up to me today and he was talking to me, and we didn't agree on everything, especially, like, the social issues. Right. But, like, we started talking, he was not really big into politics, and he loved everything, every policy, everything we had to talk about, right? And then again, when he mentioned the social issues, he felt like he had that right wing kind of conversation about it. And it's just wild that, like, it's not the policy, right? It's the standing up for other people's liberty is the issue they have, right? It's the, they don't think X people deserve Y benefit structure, liberty, or whatever. So reframing everything in terms of, like, the Constitution, individual liberty, you know, standing up for your neighbors, rebuilding the village. Like, when they start mentioning that, and I'm like, but you just said that we were missing the village. Like, you just said it's a heart problem on taking care of the homeless. You know what I mean? And then, like, you turn around and have this statement about that. It's like, isn't that your heart that's the problem? And they're like, I didn't think about it like that. I'm like, yeah, you don't have to like them, like, what they're doing. You don't have to agree with it or whatever. But, like, isn't that their liberty? Like, they're not picking your picking your pocket or breaking your leg. Like, they're just being them. And, like, there's things that you do that we're out here on a campground. It might be 2 o'clock in the morning sometimes, and somebody's going by on a boat that's so loud that, like, it wakes me up from inside my house. You know right. what I mean? Right. And, like, I don't like that. But, like, that's their liberty, is to run around in a big old boat. You know what I mean? Like, I can hear it all the way from, you know, half a mile away. You know, that's kind of the society we live in. And we should be better about that. I think both sides have a problem with, like, picking and choosing specific liberties of individuals that they're like, well, I don't like this one, so we're going to tell you you can't have that. And I'm like, both sides are terrible about that. And if we can get back into a space of that, to where we can talk about issues that, like, really matter to people, and then understand where the line is on personal liberty and, like, institutional freedoms, we're going to be in a much better space to actually have a conversation. But, like, they don't have any moorings, and so it's hard.
So a long time ago, I went to a class on communications for politicians and for campaigns, and I won't go into the whole thing. But one of the things they said every candidate needs to have is 3 bullet points that they would say about their opponent and 3 bullet points that they would say about themselves.
Okay.
So what would be your 3 bullet points about Jamie Comer and your 3 bullet points about yourself? And they're bullet points, not paragraphs.
In terms of, like, policy or representation, you mean?
Anything.
I'm assuming. Okay.
What do you want to say?
I think point one, I'm running a community focused and policy centered campaign, right? Point two is, I think that we need Congress to work for people, not corporations, special interests, or foreign powers. So that's, you know, individual stock trading bans and money out politics. Very big on that. If that's all we do next year, that's we won. You know what I mean? Like,
right.
If I can make it work for my constituents. And my third point is that, like, I'm here for you, because, like, I'm running myself ragged. The pay scale from Congress is, like, 9 times my yearly salary. Like, there's no way I'm going to sell out. I'm going to barely feel reasonable to, like, sleep. while I'm up there. Like I have that much social pressure on myself that like I'm so beholden to my community. And so those are my three things. Is like, I'm here for you. Congress needs to work for you. And, you know, like the policies we build need to be based on like the needs and experiences of our community. Okay. What I think Comer, the points about his space is that, it definitely seems like it's party over people, and that's unfortunate. You know, he said that his congressional office was prepared to do whatever the president wants. And it's never supposed to be about that. Like, if we get a Democratic president, it's not like that has nothing to do with how I run policy. You know what I mean? It's what my community needs. When that separates, I get off the bus. I think that he has made a name for himself in terms of being controversial. And that's not something that any politician should be excited about. I know it's good for social media, but it's not good for people and communities and our country. And I think that, you know, I mean, you can look at his campaign financing. You can look really wherever you want. You can look at the fact that he moved to Frankfurt and they had to redistrict Frankfurt into the district, right? Like, he doesn't want to represent us. He wants to represent corporations. He receives a whole bunch of money from corporations and from other candidates and from PACs. The only PAC money I'm taking is from unions, because I think it's a message that we can universally jump onto. So, you know, I think those are the kind of the big things is, and I hate to use the term, but it does feel a little bit like a sellout of the conversation. And the fact that like, I don't feel represented, and people only feel represented by him when they agree exactly with his, like the football game mentality of like this space, which is unfortunate. Right. Yeah.
Okay. So I have two final questions. My first one is there anything you wanted to talk about that I haven't asked you about?
No, not particularly. I hope that everybody goes and checks out both of our I'll plug him. You go to comer.house.gov and see what his policy positions look like, because they're non-existent. And if you go to my policy positions, I have like 95 and it's growing. And those are just the things that they're all economics. Right. Like, they're all economics, foreign policy, that kind of stuff, because that's what policy is. But it's because that's what our community has resoundingly advocated for. I haven't found people that have argued against those points. When people do go onto my website and like, this, like, I think like twice, I have somebody go on there and they like went through a policy and they're like, I think you need to change this and this. And I'll go do research and I'm like, oh, you're 100% correct. I was missing something. You know what I mean? Let's go in and fix that for people, right? So it's even better than before. So I advise everybody go to williamsforky.com, go to comer.house.gov. If you go to jamescomer.com, it's just literally like his about page and a donate button. So there's no policy positions, which baffles me as like somebody who's so analytical. And also just like the conversation of believing that there's energy, like Marjorie Taylor Greene's seat was a 32-point district and swung 25 points to the left. We're a 25-point district, right? Like that number is doable this year if people believe that there's energy in the conversation and passion. It doesn't have to be millions of dollars into a campaign. If we have thousands of people who are engaged and talking to their neighbors, it's a very big neighbor-to-neighbor networking campaign. I'm in like six different media markets. So like, you know, it's thousands of dollars to run a TV ad already. It's going to be so much to be across all of this district. So it's definitely going to have to be like, it's kind of like the underground conversation, like that we're running, right? I'm hoping to sneak up on him, but like, I think that like, it's going to be interesting. And of course, you know, if we can move this position 15 points to the left, it's going to look terrible for his governor's race. So I am really shocked that he's not putting a little more energy into the space of trying to engage it, because, like, I'm coming for him in that regard. I'm a big fan of term limits. This will be his sixth term in that office. So, like, if you're a Republican that's listening to any of this and you're like, I like term limits too, you can't vote for him in the fall, regardless of how you feel, or you don't actually believe that. Right. So those are kind of the things that I think that are important to note. Again, and I'm individual stock trading ban, get money out of politics. Politicians can't become lobbyists. Ethics reform for every federal office across the board. If you're appointed, elected, any of that kind of you know, you're not a career bureaucrat kind of thing. You shouldn't be allowed to be trading stocks. You shouldn't be allowed to become a lobbyist after you get out of office. You know, it should be like, I want to go up and do good because I'm doing good, not because I'm getting paid. And that's the problem that we see. I'm sure it's happened across the board historically, all the way back. But like, we got to change that. If my pay decreased by 10% every year that I was there until I left office, right? First off, I'd work for $0. I enjoy this conversation. If you keep me out of the sun and the heat and put me in some AC, I'll work all day. Right? Like, I'm 18 years out on the lake. It's 125 degrees already. So I think that's kind of the big points, is that like, there is so much just statistical data about our region that hasn't been helped. And there's so much about the way he's utilized the office that's not been helpful to our district in the conversations. Like, you know, he takes in data all the time from phone calls, emails, people seeing him. That should be tabulated. We should see that data, not individuals, but like the total amount. And if like 40% are like, healthcare is really important to me, 40% of my words next month should be healthcare.
Yeah.
Hands down. That's the goal, is that like, you have an availability to outreach, you know, go to a town hall, mention something, get us to do some fact checking for ourselves. We'll all talk about it right there. No slogans, no, you know, getting around any of it. And again, if we take all that data and you're like, hey, you know, jobs creation is really bad in Kentucky, well, then we need to be, that's 12% of the conversation. 12% of my words next month, I am going to count them, will be about job creation in our district, right? Like, and I think that way people feel more represented, even when it's not your side of the football teams. And we can move forward, because we need spaces where like people have to come to the middle and reach across these lines and build coalition about like where we want to go tomorrow. Because what we're losing is like what makes America the best country in the world, is the fact that like we have all these opinions and different peoples and we can work together. And so, you know, what people do on the global stage, we do at the national stage, right? Dealing with this huge difference of opinion and space. And so we got to get better at that. And I'm here for it. I enjoy that. I think I would do really well on Fox News. Fox News, if you want to invite me on, I think they'd have a fun time trying to make this about, you know, politics. I want to make it about policy. So
my last question is one that I ask every candidate that I interview. Let's imagine that instead of doing your blue sticker thing, you actually are knocking on my door. Mm-hmm. And instead of looking at you through the window, I'm actually opening the door.
Sure.
And so I look at you and I say, why should I vote for you? Give me your 45-second elevator pitch as to why I should vote for you.
Sure. Again, I'm running a community-focused and policy-centered campaign, hopefully bringing the unique and nuanced opinion of our community to Washington. I am going around the state or our district trying to make sure that everybody's opinion and concern is being heard across the board. That's not left or right. That's just forward. I think that you deserve a $100,000 federal tax exemption on income tax. I think that we need to make sure that like Congress and everything works for you, individual stock trading bans, politicians getting out of, you know, not becoming lobbyists, ending Citizens United and dark money, making sure that you have more pressure on your representatives to be beholden to you. I think that we need rural infrastructure plans that aren't just interstates that come through our district. They're actually things that make our communities feel like they're growing and being invested in. I think that, like, you know, you need consumer finance protection. You need a system for this digital age that works on AI and data centers in a way that is nuanced and understands like the concepts that are happening. We have so many things that are changing so rapidly. And I think that politics does a really good job of making people fearful, but we got to make people informed, right? And we need to educate people, and that's what I'm there to do. And I think that if we work together, we're going to find a lot more places to build, right, than just knocking each other down constantly. So that's kind of like, you know, that's the history of our country, and I think that that's what we need to get back to.
Excellent.
Yeah, appreciate it.
Drew Williams, running for First District Congress. Obviously, a difficult task, but meeting it with enthusiasm and passion and some really interesting policies and a good organization.
Thank
you. Thank you for being with us.
Oh yeah. I love it. I very much appreciative of the space.